Liberty Inn. There's one more chapter in E.C. Riegel. I want to finish this up because I want to get to other more interesting things. And so we'll, with that, we'll read the fourth chapter to complete this. I think it's a great work, and it's worth reading its entirety. The money power of men. Money cannot operate without competition to determine values. Such process of determination of values is the only means of assuring money acceptors that value equivalent to that surrendered will be available to them in turn. It follows that the stability of the monetary unit depends upon the spontaneous action and reaction of all participants to continue exchange, in competitive exchange, and not upon the credibility of the issuer who, though known to the bank or central bookkeeper, is unidentified with the issue in the actual circulation. This disposes of the idea that the issue power must be exercised only by the wealthy, nor should the credit from which money springs be confused with ordinary commercial credit. Commercial credit involves the promise to deliver money or goods to the creditor. It is defaultable by intent and is more rigidly structured than money-creating credit, since it stipulates a specific creditor and date of maturity. Money-creating credit is not subject to intentional default. The issuer is eager to redeem the sum of his issue, since to do so involves only getting money rather than giving. This eagerness on the part of everyone to gain money by selling goods or services is the security back of money-creating credit. Therefore, since it exists universally, the criterion of the money-creating power is not of moral responsibility of the issuer, but is of exchange capacity. In other words, the qualifying determinant of the would-be money issuer is not his moral or material responsibility, but his capacity to deliver value to the market in exchange for the money which he eagerly desires. In short, anyone who has marketable goods or services is qualified to issue money to the extent of such capacity. Everyone is so dependent upon money, the medium of exchange, that he needs no moral persuasion to give his goods or services for it. That is what he is in business for. In fact, need of money is a condition precedent to the issue thereof. To issue money, one must be without it, since money springs only from a debt balance on the books of the authorizing bank or central bookkeeper. No money can spring from a black ink balance, because such balance indicates that the holder stands as creditor to the economy, having obviously delivered more value to the market than he has taken out. This statement does not mean that on his own ledger he is in a credit position, because therein is involved also the weight of his commercial credit. But if on the books of the bank or central money bookkeeper he stands as creditor to the economy, he cannot be a money issuer without first establishing a red ink balance. In other words, before he issues money, he has to owe money to the bank. He has to, you know, have a loan that he's trying to pay off. And he'll pay that off by selling goods and services to get the money to pay off the loan. And that he has to owe the bank to be able to issue money. The statement that a would-be money issuer must be impecunious requires the qualifying explanation that this does not include currency held, as obviously there is no record of this in the central bookkeeper's account. Nor does it mean that a loan may not be executed to one who has a black ink balance. But the loan does not constitute issue, and before the depositor can write new money, he must exhaust his black ink balance. Nor does red ink balance mean an overdraft, as shown in the depositor's account. It means a deficit when the sum of the note representing the loan is taken into account. The fact that only those without money can be money issuers shows that the adequacy of money circulation requires adequacy of issuers, and that the supply can never be adequate for a healthy economy when the number of issuers is restricted. Since moral responsibility is not a qualification for a money issuer, and only the impecunious can be issuers, we must give up the idea that money issuance is the prerogative of only the elite and the wealthy. All money springs from those who have none, and just to the extent that the money issuing policy is governed by snobbish and aristocratic ideas will the economy be starved and restricted. We must also recognize that firms or corporations are more likely to be disappointed in their ability to garner money through sales than salary and wage workers. Business institutions are limited to the marketing of specific items, which the market may turn from between the time that they have issued the money and the time that they undertake to recapture it by sales, whereas wage and salary workers deal in the raw material, labor, which can be switched to the production of any commodity for which there is demand. This flexibility of labor application makes money redeeming power less speculative on the part of employees than employers. For example, take a manufacturer with 1,000 employees and compare the issuance of 10,000 money units by the employer with the same sum as issued by the employees in average lots of 100 each. Suppose the enterprise should fail and the corporation go out of business. The employees would still be in business since they could sell their labor to other employers even if the product of their previous employment were unmarketable or by their erstwhile employer. Man, the manufacturer of human energy, is less of a speculative enterpriser than an employer who has converted that energy into a specific commodity. The marketability of the latter is confined to a particular category of commodities, whereas the former is a raw product of all commodities, labor. Labor as services is indeed the sole commodity dealt with in exchange, and its value is determined by exchange. Now, if money is based upon value and the only value lies in human services, mental and manual, it may be seen that all money is service money. Does it not follow that man, with the fountain of all values, is the natural fountain of all money? There inheres in every producer the power to issue the monies necessary to negotiate his production and exchange. Therefore, as we humanize our concept of money, in exchange, we enlarge its power to advance the social and economic order. As we have seen, a money issuer initiates a money circle, and it is these circles that organize society into cooperatives. The more circle organizers the economy has, the greater the effect in elevating human standards. To be sure, not everyone can act as a money circle initiator at the same time, since, as pointed out, one must be in a debt position to become a money issuer, i.e., one must be moneyless, and therefore those with money are naturally, as long as they hold that status, disqualified as issuers. But under the existing monetary system, many who are naturally qualified are artificially disqualified. This puts a limitation upon exchange initiators, and as exchange is limited, so must production be also. Production or potential producers must always be permitted to speak to spark exchange, and thus, in consequence, production when it stalls by reason of a deficiency of money circulation. Not enough money stalls production. That's what he's saying. That's what causes depressions. In other words, no producer should be dependent upon the money circles initiated by others. When all circles fail to include him, and he is left impecunious, he serves not only himself but the economy by starting a circle himself. For if he does not, he must stop buying, and thus he reduces the demand for the production of others and spreads the contagion of unemployment. By buying, he absorbs materialized labor, thus creating demand for more, which will react upon him, since when we buy of others, we indirectly buy from ourselves. This is the security against unemployment and depression. It requires but a recognition that every man is his own employer and must not be denied the opportunity of employing himself by employing others, i.e. buying the production of others. I had to pay self-employment tax this year because I retired. And I went and got did a consulting job for a company. The government is taxing self-employment. That is a pretty big sin. Anyway, back to our issue. Two misconceptions plague our ideas of money. One is that which admits governments, which have not and cannot be invested with money-issuing power, to the money circulation. And the other is that which bars those who by nature are qualified to issue. Thus, money and exchange and production suffer from a deficiency of true money and a burdening of the false. To solve our political economic problems, we must eradicate these two evils. Our inventive genius, so marvelous in mechanics, must be turned toward contriving a monetary system that will liberate invention in the industries, since without a facile and faithful exchange system, further progress is stymied and industrial invention is rendered useless. The key concept in the organization of a new and adequate monetary system must be the recognition of the dignity of man as the producer and provider of the means of exchange. It's interesting, the government calls the constituents consumers, but really we are the producers. Government would have us think that they're the producers, and they're not. The government's actually the consumer and the waster of wealth. The key concept in the organization of a new and adequate monetary system must be the recognition of the dignity of man as the producer and provider of the means of exchange. The individual must be viewed as the elector in the economic democracy who determines by his monetary ballot the course of both the economy and the state, and he must never be denied the use of such ballot. If these provisions are respected, the economic democracy will dissolve within its operation the evils that now exist and thus progressively confine the state's activities and diminish its intervention in the economic affairs of the people. Political democracy is a delusion and a snare when it undertakes to reflect the public will in the field of economics. The ballot is too infrequent and even then involves special effort. It undertakes to secure the delegation of power to resolve legislative and executive action on a myriad of questions, some of which were not even contemplated at the time of polling, and all of which are abstract, requiring objectivity and a presumed understanding of the complex interaction of forces that neither the elector nor the elected possess. Economic democracy, on the other hand, using the money ballot, permits the elector to cast his ballot subjectively and frequently in the regular course of his living as he pursues his happiness. Furthermore, he is not subject to the will of the majority. He may vote for and secure what he desires, even if he is in the minority. To seek liberation from our limitations, not through political democracy, which at best can only negative the state's invasion of natural rights, but to pursue it by positive measures through the mastery of money, utilizing it as an untrammeled ballot in the economic democracy that knows no political boundaries, this is the new approach to freedom and human fellowship. And that is the end of chapter 4. After reading this article, I was very inspired by it because it had a lot of great ideas, very freedom-loving ideas, and it's very idealistic, which I am too, so it appealed to me. But then I thought, something's wrong with this thing. Something doesn't make sense. And I read it over again, and I went through it with a fine-tooth comb, and I created a document that I made an outline of the article. Got down to all the points that he made. And he's got some fatal flaws, I think, at the end, which I didn't spot at first. I would not have done this much time on Rigel if I had spotted these originally. But it's still a lot of great ideas. He says that to issuance credit happens when you have a red balance and you owe the bank money, even though you might have cash on hand. Trade-wise, you owe the bank money, and so you can issue money. I was like, how do you get the money into circulation? How do you do this? I mean, it would seem that the issuer would go to the bank, deposit a check, or take a loan, and somehow get cash that's created out of thin air, and then spend it into circulation. And the statement that money issuers like this don't have to be honest, don't have to be trusted morally, because they're going to want to get their money back. Well, wait a minute. Spending money is easy to do. And when you spend money, you get what you want. You get the services and goods you want. Most people are motivated to spend money. Very few people, not very few, but less people want to earn money, because earning money requires work. To produce, you know, takes effort. To produce something good rather than, you know, wrecking something, takes real effort. And yeah, you might be good at what you produce. You might have rigged up a system to produce things efficiently, but you're not motivated to do that. I mean, the natural inclination of man, unfortunately, is to spend money and just waste it. So that's a fatal flaw. Another flaw that, I don't know, fatal, but that's a flaw. Another big flaw Yes, saying that people that don't that are in a red money balance are the ones we want to issue. The ones who don't have money are the ones who want to create the money. Now, I understand why, from an economic perspective, when the economy doesn't have enough money and we need more, you want you'll have more have-nots. And the have-nots, by having the have-nots issue the money, it works in the right direction. You issue money when you need it, not when you don't need it. And then when everybody has, they all stop issuing money. The circles close, they redeem the money, and eventually there's not enough money. So then everybody gets broke again and has to make more money. That's the right direction. But unfortunately, when you are a have-not, it usually is an indicator that you are not an efficient producer. Either you're wasting money, you're spending money you don't need to spend, or you're not creating money, you're not creating wealth, and you're not making money you need to make. So unfortunately, the people issuing the money would be the worst among us, the laziest slobs that have no money. And if you give them money, and I'm not sure how this works, because he doesn't really explain that. If you give them money, let's say, issue money and let them spend it into circulation, I don't know who spends it. I mean, it can't be the bank. Why would the bank spend it in circulation? That's kind of wacky. Maybe it's not wacky. Maybe that's what would happen. The banks would get really rich. This doesn't quite fit. It doesn't, how to make a system actually work. And I'd love your comments. Think about this. If you know E.C. Rigel, if you know more about him, I'll refer to his source documentation. He has more articles, but they really don't tell you anything more. He doesn't hit the nail on the head as far as how to implement this. And he does kind of admit that here. He says, you know, we need to figure out how to implement this. So he's got a lot of great ideas. And I wanted to share those because I think they're key. I think getting the money issuance power out of the government is a key factor to prosperity and wealth. But how you do that doesn't make sense to me. Now, it's interesting. He's not mentioning the year of Jubilee idea that the Bible introduces. God's idea of a 50-year Jubilee and year where you cancel all your contracts and you start over. You just reset. All the land goes back to the original owners and the debts are canceled. And it prevents the debt spiraling from going to the extreme, which the typical cycle of depressions is 80 years. Imagine if you have a 50-year Jubilee, you'll never see a depression, assuming you have honest money, because you'll reset it. And that's, I think, a more viable option that actually is spelled out in the Bible exactly how to implement. You don't have to go quite to E.C. Rigel's extreme. Another idea from the Bible again is charity. If you have the rich giving to the poor as they have need out of charity, it's kind of like issuing currency. You could be charity in barter or you could be charity in money. But I've always liked charity. It has always struck me as a magic economic stimulant. And you don't think of that. Giving to the poor. That's what Jesus always said to do. Give to the poor, give to the poor. Well, why? Because the poor need it? Because they deserve it? Well, actually, I think it's also true that giving to the poor helps society. It helps stimulate the economy, believe it or not, because you sustain the poor, and if you give them wealth enough to get on their feet again, you've created a new producer, and you created a new money circle. Basically, a productive circle. So, loans or charitable gifts to people in need actually is a stimulant to the economy. I had a lady friend of mine many years ago who, was forced to get divorced because her husband wasn't taking care of money right. He wasn't paying his taxes and eventually they ran out of money and he was driving her broke and she had to divorce him for economic reasons. And, when she did, she was stuck starting all over from scratch at about, I think, the age of 50. And I was fortunate enough to have the money to give her a car. And without that car, it would have been very hard for her to get started, getting a job and getting productive. And I gave her that, and I'm so glad I did, because she got back on her feet. She ended up marrying a really rich guy, and she's doing great now. And, you know, she and he are producers. And so charity maybe another thing that Rigel's overlooking here that could spur an economy and create an honest money supply. It would be wonderful
if you could get rid of money altogether, just like if you could get rid of government altogether and have charity, if you'd had that faith, if you had sufficient faith in each other, you had a moral populace, and a person could actually defer collecting from someone payment, you know, I'll do this for you and you can do that for me, or it'll come back around to me from, you know, from God or karma or whatever people believe. That kind of faith actually promotes an economy. You don't need money to run an economy. You need faith to run an economy. That's all you need, really. People believe in the future. They invest. They produce because you naturally produce. A lot of production is fun. It's applying your talents to something, to create something that benefits others. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel useful. It gives you purpose in life, and it produces wealth, and it feeds you. And so he is right. This personal enterprise system is a natural system. That's the way we naturally work, and we just need to get government and swindlers out of the path, and that's clearly it. Which brings me to a justice system, which I brought up on this podcast before. If we get a justice system, I think that works. And I have ideas on that. I may go into that in a future podcast here. Justice system will, fix, I think, a lot of our problems. The money system included. True justice, where no one can hide from justice, no matter how lofty, no matter how wealthy, no matter how powerful they may appear to be. If you can have, say, a jury put these guys to death if necessary, you can stop criminals wherever they are in their tracks. And then you have an honest society that works.
There are a lot of great concepts here. It was inspiring to me to read this. And I apologize if I spent too much time on this, but of course you can just skip them and go on to other ones. I did make a great little concept-by-concept document overview of this whole thing, but I don't think I'm going to end up using it here. I used it to understand what he said better, and I think saying it again is just going to be wasting more time that you don't need wasted. So that's it for E.C. Riegel, and I hope you enjoyed it. This is Principle and Liberty, number 45. And this is Sandy Staub saying so long. Until next time, take care.